Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
If you are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, the chance of you getting seriously ill or dying from COVID is effectively zero. If you look at the people that are being admitted to hospitals, over 95% of them are either not fully vaccinated or not vaccinated at all. And so these vaccines are saving lives. They are reducing mortality.
Another Republican leader touting the importance and safety of the COVID vaccines, trying to undo the severe damage that's been done by the malicious disinformation that has contributed to now a fourth wave of the pandemic. It's real, and it is deadly for those who are unvaccinated. Also ahead, former FBI Director James Comey famously said about his conversations with former President Trump, quote, "Lordy, I hope there are tapes." Well, this morning, the Washington Post reporter is behind the bombshell book about the final days of the Trump administration. They have tapes. Carol Lenig joins us with those audio recordings of the former president. That and a lot more to cover on this Thursday, July 22nd. But first, Willie, we'll start on yesterday's move by Nancy Pelosi that is being called unprecedented.
Yeah, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi rejected two of Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy's picks for the select committee tasked with investigating the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. Now, McCarthy is threatening a complete boycott. NBC News Capitol Hill correspondent Garrett Hake has details.
Absolutely confident that a committee in chaos.
It's an egregious abuse of power. Pelosi has broken this institution.
Republican leader Kevin McCarthy withdrawing all of his selections for the January 6th special committee after Speaker Pelosi announced she would reject two of his choices for the panel. Republicans now calling the committee a sham, while Democrats vow to push ahead.
We have a bipartisan quorum. We can proceed.
The speaker writing that her unprecedented decision to not seat Ohio's Jim Jordan or Indiana's Jim Banks was necessary to protect the integrity of the investigation.
The fact that she has rejected two recommendations for two members who have indicated that they are not supportive of the objective of the select committee is consistent with how serious this committee is and how important it is to have patriots serving on this committee, not partisans.
Now, just one Republican remains on the committee, Wyoming's Liz Cheney, appointed by the speaker alongside seven Democrats, defending the investigation to come.
This must be an investigation that is focused on facts. And the idea that any of this has become politicized is really unworthy of the office that we all hold and unworthy of our republic.
Garrett Hake reporting from Capitol Hill for us there. Joining us now, co-founder of Punch Bowl News, Jake Sherman. He's an MSNBC political contributor, White House reporter for the Associated Press, Jonathan Lemire, doing yeoman's work on Way Too Early this week, and member of the New York Times editorial board, Mara Gay. Good morning to all of you. Jake, let me start with you and what we saw on Capitol Hill yesterday. Perhaps predictable that it was going to go this way when Jim Jordan was placed on the committee. But what strikes me sitting here is Republicans are acting like 2 months ago they did not have the chance to create the very commission that they're lamenting is not being created here, which is a 9/11 style commission. Only six Republicans in the Senate made that vote. It wasn't enough to clear the 60 vote threshold to create a commission, and it failed. And now here we are with this select committee, which is falling apart before our eyes. What's going on here? What happens next?
So what happens next, Willie, is that we have an all-Democratic panel. That's what happens next.
Plus Liz Cheney.
And yeah. Plus Liz Cheney. That's exactly right. Appointed by Nancy Pelosi, who said yesterday she believes McCarthy should never be speaker, and she agreed with Pelosi's decision to remove Jim Banks and Jim Jordan from the committee. So you know, I don't know what the politics of this are. I think, to be honest with you, Willie, if I had to kind of read the lines here from the pure political angle, I'll talk about the substantive in a second. The pure political angle, they both kind of got what they wanted, right? I mean, I think McCarthy didn't want to participate in this and wouldn't have created it on his own volition, quite obviously. And he's not participating in it now. It's a shame because this, again, shouldn't be a partisan issue because as somebody who was there that day, it was a tragic incident. That's number one. Number two, what you said, Willie, is the key point. Republicans are complaining about things that they had in their power to put in place. They voted against a bipartisan committee, a committee in which they would have had complete veto power over every subpoena, over everything that the committee did. So they threw that opportunity away several months ago. And now here we are. They say they're going to do their own investigation. And Willie, they said yesterday, McCarthy, Banks, Jordan, and all those guys on the committee, and they're all men, which a lot of people noticed in the Capitol. What they said is that their top priority is why wasn't the Capitol better prepared? That's a fair question to be asking in the scheme of things. I would not say that's a lot of people's top priorities, generally speaking. McCarthy pointed to the Senate investigation, which has been ongoing. Clearly, he's not very interested, and he said this. He doesn't want a committee with Pelosi.
And, of course, Jonathan Lemire, Mitch McConnell 2 months ago whipped votes against the creation of a bipartisan 9/11-style commission to look into this. So yesterday, when you have Minority Leader McCarthy standing there talking about the sanctity of the people's house and what Nancy Pelosi, rolling your eyes is the minimum. They had the chance. Republicans had the chance to do the kind of investigation that they're talking about, and they want us to forget that they passed on it.
Yeah, we've just hit upon the deeply cynical play that this is. Now the Republicans are going to emerge from this with their own report, which they will put up as a co-equal to what the Pelosi's and the Democrat plus Liz Cheney committee is going to do. And they'll say, look, two different versions of the truth. And they will try to water it down. It's more the same sort of obscuring and trying to the fog machine as to what happened on January 6th that continues the pattern from Republicans downplaying the severity of that day, which, by the way, we seemingly get new video every day. Yep. That underscores just how harrowing it was and how much worse it could have been had it not for a little bit of luck and some heroism from some Capitol Police officers. But this is just going to become another political talking point. And they're going to try to turn the page on this as quickly as they can, bury it, say, oh, it's just Washington politics again. And despite pressure from the White House for this to happen, despite pressure, you know, Democrats going into it seemingly with a real good faith effort, a bipartisan attempt to get to the bottom of what happened to try to prevent something like this from happening again, Republicans not going to play ball. And it's just going to lead to more and more Americans just shrugging their shoulders and saying, look, this is why Washington is so broken.
So here is more from Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney yesterday about Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy's threat to pull his picks for the January 6th Select Committee.
The rhetoric that we have heard from the Minority Leader is disingenuous. The attack on this building on January 6th was the worst attack on this Capitol since 1814. It was an attack on our Constitution. The American people deserve to know what happened. The people who did this must be held accountable. There must be an investigation that is nonpartisan, that is sober, that is serious, that gets to the facts wherever they may lead. And at every opportunity, the minority leader has attempted to prevent the American people from understanding what happened, to block this investigation.
McCarthy, of course, wants to become speaker next year. Do you think that he deserves to be speaker in the aftermath of his actions here?
I think that any person who would be third in line to the presidency must demonstrate a commitment to the Constitution and a commitment to the rule of law. And Minority Leader McCarthy has not done that.
So, Mara Gay, I see two strains here in this country, two strains of division and a lack of respect for basic truth that could ultimately lead to the rubber meeting the road for Republicans. I know for the entire Trump presidency, we kept hearing this is it, this is it, this is it. But I do think these two strains could be it. And I'm wondering if this editorial would make it through the New York Times editorial board. But you have a basic impossibility on Capitol Hill with the two members that were ruled out of the committee by Nancy Pelosi because of a basic commitment to truth about what happened on January 6th, that it was an insurrection, that it was violent, that it was an attack on our democratic process. There's that basic truth that is being debated, which is an impossibility. You can't debate the truth. And then you have the truth about COVID and this Delta variant that is isolating the lies and the conspiracy theories, again, under the umbrella of Trump, January 6th and COVID. And I think this may be where the rubber meets the road for Republicans who appear to be running for cover on COVID. Do you agree?
Oh, Mika, it's what you lay out is, of course, exactly what's happening in this country. The unfortunate part is that so many times we've talked about it, you and I mean, we think that the dam is going to break, and it just hasn't. And I think that's why Liz Cheney is playing such a crucial role, because her presence on this committee, which should be far more bipartisan and robust in that way than it is proof positive that this is a serious task to really get to the bottom of what happened on January 6th, and that this is not about partisanship, but of course is about protecting democracy. I think, unfortunately, what we're seeing is just another step, another touchstone of the Republican Party's slow walk away from democracy and toward just an interest in sheer power. The frustrating thing is that because of the right-wing media juggernaut that is helping pump this disinformation into the eyes and minds and ears of so many Americans, they can kind of run, the party can run on these fumes for much longer than it otherwise would. So the amount of disinformation I think that Americans are receiving is vast. And we're not talking about different points of view. We are talking about untruths, lies. And in this case, they're very dangerous, that vaccines could be dangerous, that COVID isn't that big of a deal. Or that, fellow Americans are against you somehow. All of these things are lies and they're very dangerous. So that's kind of what democracy is up against. The Democratic Party cannot do this alone. We need a multi-party democracy. We need competition in elections and in this country. And so as long as the Republican Party, as long as its members truly are getting away electorally with behaving this way, our democracy is in real trouble. The fact that they don't feel a need to take part in this very basic exercise of defending the Capitol and those who were there that day should really set off alarm bells for the rest of the country. And Liz Cheney should not be standing alone here. This is kind of an all hands. This is what we call a five alarm fire in New York for democracy. This is a real problem.
So, Jake, at some point, everyone's just going to have to take Republicans at their word when they say we don't want to look back at January 6th, whether it's, you know, ejecting Liz Cheney from her position of leadership, voting down a bipartisan commission, a 9/11 style commission, or now making a farce of this select committee. What else do you see ahead of us in terms of how these two parties attempt even to work together? We've got infrastructure on the table. We've got police reform on the table. We've got all these massive packages in front of us. How does the body that you cover every day proceed? How do they get anything done when there's this complete lack of good faith and goodwill?
So in the Senate, a lot is getting done, seemingly. But just, you know, there's this bipartisan infrastructure package, which is close to completion. And you know, Willie, I'm probably the most cynical and pessimistic person on planet Earth. And I do think that there's going to be a deal here on the bipartisan infrastructure package. And I think that it will happen quite soon. Now, will it pass the Senate? I think it will. Will it pass the House? I don't know if it will. But let me answer your question directly. There's nothing, not one thing that will get done in the House of Representatives on a broadly bipartisan basis. I'm not talking about one Republican, two Republicans, but nothing in the House is going to get done on a bipartisan basis because Republicans feel, I mean, not because, but Republicans do feel like they are on the edge of winning the majority. They are going to win the majority, they think, based on history, based on trends, based on all of those things. And they don't feel the incentive. And frankly, listen, Willie, we just had Kevin McCarthy at Donald Trump's summer home in New Jersey last week.
Yeah.
And, you know, McCarthy gets very, I just want to make this point because I think this is very important to say. McCarthy gets very frustrated about getting asked about Trump. And we see that every week. It's not hard to see that he's frustrated when he's asked about Trump at these press conferences that you're showing clips on, clips of right now. But how could he not get questions about him? He's the president's closest political ally. He's going to become speaker with the help, if he becomes speaker, of Donald Trump. So it's quite obvious why he gets asked about him. He's a close ally of his. And Republicans, unlike Senate Republicans, remember when Mitch McConnell is asked about Donald Trump, he says he doesn't even mention Donald Trump's name anymore. But Republicans are still incredibly closely tied to Donald Trump.
All right, Jake Sherman of Punchbowl News, thank you so much for being on this morning. And now we turn to the latest with coronavirus, where cases here in the U.S. have nearly tripled over the last 2 weeks in a growing number of hospitals. The nation is seeing an influx of COVID patients, most of them unvaccinated and young. NBC News' Ellison Barber returned to one hospital in South Carolina.
Give you the best chance possible.
A year ago, the COVID ICU at Lexington Medical Center was pushed to the brink. This week, doctors say it's feeling like deja vu.
We could very easily be back in a similar situation.
This man is the newest COVID patient admitted to the ICU, and Dr. Philip Keith is trying to figure out if he needs to be on a ventilator.
There's a very high likelihood he'll require, you know, more invasive care.
Around the corner is another COVID patient, just 26 years old, receiving a plasma exchange because some of his organs are failing.
A week ago, there were zero COVID patients in this hospital's ICU. Today, there are nine, and four of them are on ventilators, the vast majority unvaccinated.
Obesity would be their only probably diagnosis of some. Others have no conditions at all, and otherwise, really the only link is that they're not vaccinated.
Almanzo Cromer was one of Dr. Keith's COVID patients, hospitalized for nearly 2 months. Almanzo was eligible to get vaccinated early in the year, but didn't. Now he'll tell anyone who will listen.
Go ahead and get the vaccination, because the COVID is for real. Like, it had me on my dying bed.
Statewide COVID hospitalizations have increased by 103% in less than a month.
What I would ask from our community is, again, continue to understand the vaccine. The benefit outweigh the risk 100-1.
God, you know, yesterday we talked about the cult of Trump, the irrational avoidance of objective, verifiable facts related to COVID, the vaccine, or the election. And it has all the markings of a cult. The fact that 99% of people who go to hospitals now with COVID are those who did not get the vaccine. And the fact that most supporters of Donald Trump still refuse to get the vaccine shows just how powerful that cult has become. Look at the people who voted for Donald Trump who are now dying in hospital beds across middle America. And understand this has become a death cult. Please understand this. It's not like one. Sadly, even doctors who sign death certificates of family members who refuse to get the vaccine and try to save their surviving family members are now subject to threats. One example is an Alabama doctor. All but one of Dr. Brittany Cobaya's COVID patients at Birmingham's Grandview Medical Center did not receive the coronavirus vaccine. The vaccinated patient is expected to fully recover, but some of the unvaccinated ones are dying. And Dr. Cobaya pleaded on a post on Facebook saying this, I'm admitting young, healthy people to the hospital with very serious COVID infections. One of the last things they do before they're intubated is beg me for the vaccine. I hold their hand and I tell them that I'm sorry, it's too late. A few days later, when I call time of death, I hug their family members and I tell them the best way to honor their loved one is to go get vaccinated and encourage everyone they know to do the same. They cry and they tell me they didn't know. They thought it was a hoax. They thought it was political. They thought because they had a certain blood type or a certain skin color that they wouldn't get as sick. They thought it was just the flu. But they were wrong, and they wish they could go back, but they can't. So they thank me, and they go get the vaccine. And I go back to my office, I write their death note, and say a small prayer that this loss will save more lives. Willie.
Yep, that disinformation is deadly, and that's a very powerful piece, AL.com. Everybody ought to read the full thing. I hope it breaks through and perhaps convinces some people in the state of Alabama, where Dr. Kobia works. She's at a hospital in Birmingham, and perhaps across some of the other states with low vaccination rates have become so vulnerable. It's also a commentary on where we are as a culture that Dr. Kobia is getting threats now because she wrote that piece and has sort of backed off any public-facing appearances because of the threats she's getting describing the work she's doing trying to save people's lives. Joining us now, founding director of the Boston University Center for Emerging Infectious Diseases Policy and Research, Dr. Naheed Bhadelia. She's an NBC News and MSNBC medical contributor. Dr. Bhadelia, it's great to see you this morning. We can get into some of the particulars of what's happening across the country, but I'm just interested in your reaction to that piece we heard from the doctor in Birmingham, a scene that's playing out in hospitals now across the country.
As a physician, it is heartbreaking to see that. And I think it's heartbreaking because we've, all of us in healthcare have been at bedsides, you know, where you wish you could do more. And I can feel that doctor's helplessness in that situation. And honestly, it just underscores for me why we're all out here doing this, talking about the vaccine, trying to get the public health message out there, because the deaths that are happening right now, majority of those, as we've talked about it again and again, are among unvaccinated. And if each of us could reach one person who might get the vaccine, maybe that's one potential less person who might end up in that hospital. So I speak with a heavy heart. It's sad to see that.
Do you think, Dr. Bhadelia, things may begin to change? I just quickly wrote down a list of Republicans who've spoken out saying you've got to go get the vaccine in the last 2 days. Governor Ron DeSantis yesterday in Florida. We've heard Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell speak out very clearly on that. Tommy Tuberville, the senator from Alabama, has spoken out again yesterday about this, I think after reading that piece, actually, from the doctor in Birmingham. Steve Scalise, Sean Hannity, some other hosts on Fox News saying, go get the vaccine. It saves lives. Do you think we'll see the trajectory change here? Because as you point out, it's heading in a bad direction in the states where people are not vaccinated.
That's right. I hope it does, Willie. I think that any person, you know, any of the government officials that you talked about, particularly in areas where that are under vaccinated for the reasons that we talked about, you know, you heard that in the narrative that the doctor wrote, the fact that people thought it was political, the fact that after a year and a half and hundreds of thousands of people dead, that potentially people thought that this was a hoax. And if it makes a difference, I am all for that. The only thing that I'll make a suggestion is for government officials is that to be consistent, to keep saying it. You know, I think that to say it once, to say that your duty's done there, particularly when your states are so heavily affected, it's not enough. You know, we're out here. That doctor is out there putting her name on there and taking death threats for this. You know, be consistent and get the message out there, because I think it will affect some people enough so that they will get the vaccine and potentially they'll change the trajectory of their disease.
Dr. Padilla, good morning. It's Jonathan Lemire. We've seen some counties and some jurisdictions like Los Angeles reinstitute mask mandates for people when they're indoors. And we know the White House has had some preliminary discussions about whether they should change their messaging about masks indoors, even for vaccinated people. So far, they're just deferring to the CDC. The CDC has not changed their guidance yet. But what do you think? Are we at the point now, as the Delta variant surges, as cases go up in all 50 states, should Americans who are vaccinated, should they be wearing masks if they're inside around other people?
Yeah, Jonathan, I think you're going to get a range of opinions on this because I think that this is an evolving situation. We're learning about it. My thought is that in a heavily vaccinated state, you can't just base it on cases. You should look at the surge and the trajectory as they're going up, but you also need to look at hospitalizations and deaths, right? Because there should be a disconnect because you should see fewer people being hospitalized in those settings. And so I do think that in those areas, even in heavily affected, you know, heavily vaccinated states, if you start seeing hospitalizations go up and and cases go up, it might be time to add an extra layer of mitigation until those can come down and more people or pockets of unvaccinated can be covered.
Dr. Padilla, first of all, when we talk about being in a fourth wave, what does that mean exactly? Are we going back to square one where it was at its worst?
I actually don't. Well, again, the tough part here is that the Delta variant is a much different, beast, right? I think you're finding there's a lot more transmissible. But the things that are working in our favor is that we do have a percentage of all our populations in every state vaccinated, even though in some it's very low. In those states, I think things will start to get worse than they are right now. You know, one hopes that with the number of people who have been vaccinated, potentially it won't be as bad. But you can't predict that because there was a recent study that talked about the Delta variant causing 1,000 times higher amounts of virus at first diagnosis in people who are infected. And so that higher transmissibility could take over the advantage of the small number of people who are vaccinated in that state. One hopes, though, right, that in the states that are highly vaccinated, that you could see some increases, but we are in a better spot than we were before. But it's hard to sort of see what's happening. And when you're looking at Israel and you're looking at UK, even there, though, you can see that the cases have gone up, but proportionally hospitalizations and deaths have not gone up as much as they were before.
I can't think of a country, that comes close to having this sort of rebellion within it to the truth on COVID. And it seems to me, as a, respected member of the public health community, one of the biggest issues would be messaging and how we treat these patients, especially this large number of unvaccinated who are now having the Delta variant rip through their lives and take their lives. And I wonder if there's a way to look at it where these doctors are not just treating COVID patients, but many of them are COVID patients who are also victims of a cult, who are people who have suffered at the hands of mass disinformation and have fallen because of it. And is there a way to message differently, as if you are messaging to cult members? I know it might sound crazy, but that's where we are in crazy times, where we have people who are dying because they did not know. And it's not just one or two people. It's large swaths of people who choose to remain unvaccinated because of the disinformation. We're seeing it anecdotally, and we're seeing it in the data. Does the messaging need to change? Do we need to start studying how to speak to people who are suffering from two things, COVID and cult?
I think, Mika, one of the biggest surprises for most physicians and public health folks is how prevalent disinformation and misinformation were in changing the course of this pandemic. I think that's one of the things that my center is looking at, aside from best strategies in treating patients and public health interventions, how disinformation and public health responses during outbreaks sort of affect each other. So yes, a lot of work still needs to be done on that. But what we know from prior experiences is that it does work to have trusted messengers speak to those populations. And that's why I think it's powerful. And I think it should be consistent that many of these Republican officials who are in these states with low vaccination rates, they continue to speak about this, you know, to continue to take, I would extend that invitation to as many people on right-leaning media as well to take that on, because it is saving lives. When they support vaccinations, they are mm-hmm. literally playing a role in saving lives. The other thing, that there's a Kaiser survey that talks about the fact that, you know, when people talk about who they would listen to, it's their pediatricians, it's their physicians. And so having that interface with someone who's potentially treating you for other things could make an impact for a smaller number of people, because at that amount of time, interface allows us to dispel some of that disinformation and, you know, misinformation that's out there.
Dr. Bedelia, let me ask you about kids. A lot of parents watching this show felt like, okay, we've turned a corner. The summer looked good. The fall was going to be fine. We're going to be back in school full time, masks off, back to normal. And now we get this new guidance a couple of days ago from the American Academy of Pediatrics recommending masking for kids inside school, all kids. We know that 12 and up can get the vaccine. It's readily available, though still a lot of work to do in terms of getting 12 and up vaccinated. But 12 and under, no vaccine, we hear, until perhaps the middle of winter. How should parents be thinking? I know every state, every community is different, but how should parents be thinking about the fall in school?
Well, I think if we want to go back in an environment where kids are still unvaccinated and they're coming indoors, particularly in communities where cases are going up, you know, the pathway to get to a point where there's safe in school or in-person schooling is to vaccinate as many adults as possible, because that way you're reducing the amount of virus in the community that you're in. And then you add extra mitigation layers, right? I mean, and I think that's what the CDC guidance so was also meant to do, is supposed to stress vaccination, but then to say that in areas where you're seeing surges, you're seeing greater hospitalizations, kids are still part of our communities. Throughout this, they have reflected the community transmission. And so extra layers such as masking, such as distancing, better ventilation could help those schools be safer, particularly when there is greater disease transmission in those communities. So I do agree with the American Academy of Pediatrics, particularly in those settings.
All right, Dr. Naheed Bedelia, thank you so much for being on this morning. We appreciate your expertise. And still ahead on Morning Joe, what exactly was President Trump's goal on January 6th? What did he hope would happen? Those were questions posed by Washington Post reporter Carol Lenig in an interview for the new book, I Alone Can Fix It. We'll have exclusive audio from those conversations, plus Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg joins us on the heels of yesterday's failed infrastructure vote. What's next? You're watching Morning Joe. We'll be right back.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
The procedural vote to move forward with the unfinished bipartisan infrastructure bill has failed in the Senate. The final vote was 49-51, with every Republican, including the ones working on the bill, voting against. It needed 60 votes to pass. The vote was intended to pressure the group of lawmakers into quickly finishing negotiations. Senators working on the legislation say they will keep at it. In a joint statement, they write in part, "We will continue working hard to ensure we get this critical legislation right. and are optimistic that we will finalize and be prepared to advance this historic bipartisan proposal to strengthen America's infrastructure and create good-paying jobs in the coming days. End quote. Meanwhile, new polling shows the overwhelming majority of American voters in key swing districts support both a bipartisan infrastructure bill and a separate social spending bill. But there is one condition, and a big one. Most voters say they only support that second bill if it is backed by both parties. With us now, the people behind that poll, chief strategist for No Labels, Ryan Clancy, and pollster Amy Levitin. Good morning to you both. Ryan, I'll begin with you here in the studio with us. Walk us through the polling. It looks like 72% of Americans support a bipartisan effort.
Yep.
At this legislation, but they don't want to spend too much money, it appears.
Yeah, 72% support the bipartisan infrastructure bill. 76% want it alone. They don't want it linked to anything else. So, I mean, what's original about this poll is there's a lot of polling out there about this infrastructure spending, but a lot of it's national, a lot of it's party funded to conveniently give them the answers they want. A lot of it just looks at a specific provision, are you for or against two-year college? This is the first poll that really gets into the districts, the 33 districts, 20 are swing districts that are going to decide the 22 midterms, to really look at a granular level. What do people want? What are the trade-offs they're willing to accept? And, you know, it's interesting.
So despite that procedural vote yesterday, Jake Sherman was just on with us a minute ago saying he, too, is optimistic that this bipartisan package is going to get done. But if you go down into your polling, 57% of the people you talk to say, we want the bipartisan bill. That looks good. We like parties working together, bridges, roads, and all that. But this $4.7 trillion package that the White House and Democrats are talking about goes too far.
Yeah, I want to give you some findings that really just get to the public's collective unease. With once you start getting to those numbers, we asked a question where we said, if there was that level of spending, what would concern you? And here's what we got. We got 74% would be concerned with runaway inflation, 78% that it would be higher taxes on them personally down the line, 69% lower growth, 69% a negative impact on my family's finances. So it's not that they're against the specific provisions, but collectively, you get to these kind of numbers, they get nervous.
Hey, Amy, Jonathan Lemire. We just talked about there is some hope here for this bipartisan deal, and the White House is the same, according to our reporting, that they believe they were very encouraged by Mitt Romney yesterday, saying, hey, 10, 11 Republicans, they could be on board next week. But we know that though there is sincere hope that it gets done, there's also a subplot to this, that the Democrats felt like they needed to make a bipartisan effort to show the moderates, to reassure the moderates in their own ranks, Senators Manchin and Sinema, hey, we tried. So even if it falls apart, that might make them more comfortable going big, going alone for this reconciliation bill, which would only grow if infrastructure had to be put into that. But what does your polling show? What the threshold that Americans want to see in terms of a cost? But also, if this were to fall apart, is there a sense as to which party would take more of the blame? How would that play out?
Mm-hmm. It's an excellent question. And again, I think this poll is really unique because it does ask some of the edgier, interesting questions around that. I think what it really shows is there are a lot of positive news, right? A high degree of consensus, both as you say, and the president saw for the initiative the president is selling hard on reconciliation. You know, there's a lot more work to be done, first and foremost, because voters really overwhelmingly want bipartisan support. I think that there is awareness of if one party was to ram it through with razor thin support, it's not going to bode well really for them. What voters want is there's bipartisan support for bipartisan support, if you will. And to Ryan's point a minute ago, there's a lot of concern about the impact on personal finance, high inflation, impact on the economy, if it is to be rammed through.
Mara Gay, I wonder what your thoughts are on these results. Again, focusing on key swing districts. What do you make of these?
Well, I think what it means is that the Democrats are not going to move until that they are satisfied that they have found some consensus and that they can really show the American people and reassure Democrats in swing districts that they are going to be protected. There are various ways to do that. So I actually think behind the scenes, there's some confidence on this. There are a lot of local issues. Remember that these swing district members want to deliver on to their members. And really, all politics is local. So what we're talking about here is probably pork. But that's how you get deals done in Washington. And I do think there's some confidence that this can be accomplished.
So, Ryan, the case against this big package that Republicans have made is a lot of this isn't really infrastructure spending, that they're taking, that Democrats are taking some liberties with the definition of infrastructure. The Democrats say, well, the definition of infrastructure has changed since it was just bridges, sure, roads and tunnels. What do the American people think? Do they believe, yes, it should be this hard infrastructure that we've come to know over generations? Or are they buying into the idea that there's more to it now?
We actually asked this question specifically, and it's clear Democratic and Republican leaning districts. When people think of infrastructure, they think of the traditional definition: roads, bridges, water, broadband. The other stuff, it's social spending. Doesn't mean they don't like it, but they classify it differently.
Amy, what's your take on that? Who's winning the argument? Republicans saying this is not actually infrastructure, a lot of what Democrats are talking about.
Yeah, I mean, the support is really muted at best once you add in what's considered social spending. I mean, when do we see 7 in 10 voters across, you know, I think it's 87% of Democrats, 70 independents, and 55% of Republican-leaning voters supporting what's seen as kind of pure infrastructure? And that does fall when you add in social spending with the price tag.
Interesting stuff. Amy Levitin, Ryan Clancy, thanks for bringing us these new numbers this morning. Good to see you both. Coming up next here, the White House is ratcheting up pressure on social media platforms to do more to contain vaccine misinformation. We'll have an exclusive look at how anti-vaccine messaging has been spreading. Plus, Assistant Speaker Catherine Clark joins us to weigh in on Nancy Pelosi's decision to block two of Kevin McCarthy's picks for the January 6th committee. Morning Joe's coming right back. It's a wonder I can think at all.
And my life. The International Rescue Committee works in more than 50 countries, serving people whose lives have been upended by war, conflict, and natural disasters. In places like Gaza, Ukraine, and Lebanon, displaced families are experiencing rough winter weather on top of war, hunger, and displacement. All of this has driven up food prices, destroyed infrastructure, and driven millions from their homes. Donations help the IRC provide families with resources like food, shelter, fuel, medicine, blankets, and cash assistance. Donate today by visiting rescue.org/rebuild.
Can I have a 50 piece? Sorry, I will put you. Can I put your camera? Do you mind or no?
Sure.
There's 150,000 people watching you right now.
Really?
Yes. So can I have, please, a 50-piece Mac Minis, 50 exactly.
Okay.
Not 51, not 49, chicken minis, yes, 50.
That is Milwaukee Bucks star Giannis Antetokounmpo hungry for another 50-piece after dropping a 50-piece on the Suns to win the NBA Finals the other night. The MVP streaming live on Instagram yesterday as he ordered a meal to match those 50 points scored during Tuesday night's title-clinching victory over the Phoenix Suns. It's hard, Jonathan Lemire, to conceive of a more likable star for the NBA right now. And, as always, the best customer service on planet Earth goes to Chick-fil-A.
I would say the other MVP performance there is the Chick-fil-A server who had no idea as she walked up to that car that the NBA Finals MVP was sitting inside, who'd be live streaming it for apparently over 100,000 people. And she didn't blink. She took the order, polite, smile, got it done. Yeah. And agreed on Giannis, who is a really good guy, a very likable figure, one who decided against joining some super team somewhere else, stayed put, stayed in Milwaukee, signed his extension. And I would say some of his old tweets when he first gets to the U.S. and he's like discovering America, he's like, what's a smoothie? Are just so delightful. And it's great to see him come up so big in the biggest stage.
Now, I respect the order, but I think we agree you just get the number one with lemonade at Chick-fil-A.
That's right. If it's perfection, why mess with it? Just get the standard Chick-fil-A sandwich. Perfect.
I will say an 8 or a 12 piece for dessert on the Nuggets works as well to go with the number one.
Reasonable.
Let's turn now to the Olympics, where Namibian cyclist Dan Craven is the latest Olympic athlete to become infected with COVID-19. Mm. The rider returned a positive result in a pre-event test in Spain, where he lives with his family. He will be replaced for Saturday's race in Japan. Craven told the Namibian newspaper He had been trying to receive a COVID-19 vaccine through Spain's national healthcare system, but, quote, the bureaucratic system to get registered has just been crazy. Meanwhile, four more residents of the Olympic Village, including two athletes, have tested positive for coronavirus. A total of 91 people accredited for the Games now have tested positive since the beginning of July, not including athletes who tested positive before their scheduled travel to Tokyo, where infections are up to 150%. They're up 150% from last week, with more than 1,800 new cases reported in the city yesterday. But, Jonathan Lemire, the opening ceremony will go on as scheduled tomorrow night in Tokyo.
On the NBC family of networks.
That's right, hosted by our dear friend Savannah Guthrie and Mike Tirico.
Excited about it. The Olympics are always special. My boys are really excited to watch. This year, of course, will be surreal. There won't be any fans in the stands. Well, the First Lady Jill Biden will have will be in the building. Excited for the Olympics, but obviously worrisome to have all these cases seemingly by the day. Another athlete has to drop out. And I know that there are some public health officials who worry what will come next. But yes, the games themselves will be great.
The games will go on, Mika.
Yeah. I'm worried. It's beginning to not feel right. Still ahead, new audio recordings reveal how former President Trump felt about Mike Pence following the election. It was part of an exclusive conversation for the new book, I Alone Can Fix It. We'll hear more from that and much more news straight ahead on Morning Joe.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.